If, or anything like the rest of us, when you correct the papers, you'll want to go right back to the books and begin studying with a new spirit of concentration and dedication, I'm sure. Of course, that's the purpose of the quiz. Yeah. This isn't about living the life. It's about the Baha'i calendar. Surprised?
Oh, yeah.
But it's directly on our subject. I think it will show us that although we have known and used the Baha'i calendar for years and years, most of us, we really remember very little about details. Just as we've been given guidance for nearly half a century, or over a century in some cases, on living the life, yet we've not put it into effect in our personal lives in the manner we should. Now, is this true about the calendar? Let's find out. Ready, good. Here's a quotation first from the beloved guardian.
It is advisable to use both the Baha'i dates according to the Baha'i calendar and the usual Gregorian dates as well. The friends at present are free to do as they please.
Did you know that? Yes. How many of you regularly use both the Baha'i dates and the regular Western calendar dates in all your Baha'i correspondence? Where'd everybody go? All right. Put me right down there at the head of the list, yes. But we'll try to improve beginning tomorrow. Or as Dr. Jacare said at the school, today. All right. I'll put myself down at the head of the list. So let's have a short quiz on the Baha'i calendar. That's something certainly we should all be familiar with. We consult it often for all of our activities. Question. How many feast days and holy days are there in November?
Answer. Five.
Mm-hmm.
The birth of Baha'u'llah, the passing of the Master, the Day of the Covenant, three holy days, and two 19-day feasts.
Question. What is the Persian name of the two 19-day feasts in November? That's easy.
Answer. Kadrat and Kol.
Question. Perhaps that was too difficult. It suddenly got very silent in here, I noticed. I couldn't hear the scratching of any pens. Now, although we certainly should be familiar with our own calendar, shouldn't we? Now, let's make it easy. Question. What is the English name for the Feast of Kudrat?
Answer. Power.
Question. What is the English name for the Feast of Kol?
Answer. Speech.
Question. Still too difficult? All right. Now, this is easy. We use this information every year, year in, year out. Question. On what day in November does the Feast of Power, Kudrat, fall?
Answer. November 4th.
Question. What day in November is the Feast of Kol? Speech.
Answer. November 23rd.
I know that because it's my wife's birthday. Feast of Speech. I'm always sure of that one. Question. No fair leaving the room to get a calendar or the new era. Because, you know, this is all from memory, from what we do every day, every month, every year. And it's a little shattering, isn't it, really? Haven't you found it so? Question.
Skip November.
Well, I know how you feel. How would you like to try for May?
How about an easier month?
Well, all right. I'll tell you what. You pick it. Shall we have a prayer for protection?
Yes.
How about March?
More than that.
March? All right, Nauru's New Year's month. Question. How many feast days and holy days and special days are there in the month of March?
Answer. Three. New Year's Day, Nauru's, and two 19-day feasts.
Everybody get that?
Yes.
But what about the other special days?
Answer. The final days of the intercalary days and the 19 days of the fast.
Now, question. What is the Persian name for the first of the two 19-day feasts in March?
Answer. Allah.
Nobody raised their hand. Question. What is the English name for this feast day?
Answer. Loftiness.
Question. What is the Persian name of the second 19-day feast in March? Now, this is a name I'm sure that everyone will get. It's the first day of the first month of the new year. Who could miss that, I mean? Now, what is the Persian name?
Answer, Baha.
Question, what is the name of this feast day in English?
Answer, Splendor.
What if we said glory?
Well, all right, how many said glory?
Right.
All right, fine, well, that's understandable. Baha, glory. But the calendar, if we look at it, says splendor. That is one of the meanings of Baha. Question, who is sorry he came to this quiz?
Yeah.
All right, question, what is the Persian name for the Feast of Nauruz?
Well, Nauruz.
Nauruz, yes. Who's buried in Grant's tomb, right?
No.
Question. Now that we're back on a winning streak, question.
Let's skip March.
I think.
Are the 19-day feast on the 21st of March and the Nauru's feast one and the same feast?
Answer. No. In the words of the beloved guardian, his secretary writing on his behalf, The Nowruz feast should be held on March 21st before sunset and has nothing to do with the 19-day feast. The 19-day feast is administrative in function, whereas the Nowruz is our new year, a feast of hospitality and rejoicing. Baha'i News 236, October 1950.
Mm-hmm. Of course, all you had to say to be correct was no. But it's surprising how often these two feasts are put together.
Yes.
And, of course, they shouldn't be. Now, question. I'll give you the names of the 7 days of the week. Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday.
I know these.
Yes, so far, anyway. Now, wait a minute. Now, you give me in reply first the Persian name for each day of the week and then the English name. Now, that's quite easy. Question. Saturday.
Answer. Jalal, glory.
Question. Sunday.
Answer. Jamal, beauty.
Question. Monday.
Answer. Kamal, perfection.
Question. Tuesday.
Answer. Fezal, grace.
Question. Wednesday.
Answer. Edal, justice.
Question. Thursday.
Answer. Eztejlal, majesty.
Question. Friday.
Answer. Ezteklal, independence.
Question. Have you had enough?
Which way to the library?
You know, I'm glad there's no Persian here for both of us. Yes. 2 points off for all the pronunciations, but at least you get the idea. Well, beloved friends, the questions weren't designed to make you miss. We should have known them, right?
Yes. But look at my calendar. It doesn't give those Persian names or the English names.
No, I see.
It just circles the days of the feast and the holy day.
Well, right here. Look at my credentials. They only say I'm a Baha'i. They don't say what's in the Will and Testament or in the Agon or the Promised Day has come. Those calendars are to help us remember the great feast days. But the real jewels are in the writings themselves and the details in the calendar itself. The sooner we know and use the Baha'i calendar, the sooner it will take its rightful place in the world. That's important. Our efforts as local assemblies, under the loving guidance of our wonderful national assemblies, to gain recognition of Baha'i holy days in our schools, universities, and places of work are of the utmost importance. They help establish the faith in the world. They bring it recognition, legal recognition. We should pursue these goals with the greatest diligence. We should be intimately familiar with the treasures that are hidden in our precious faith. All right. Now, by the way, what is the year, the month, and the day of the week tonight in both Persian and English?
Let's go back.
Yeah, I was just kidding. I suggest we get back to our subject, teaching and how important living the Baha'i life is in all teaching.
Good.
All right, fine, but I think the calendar helps us realize how we do have to study. Uh-huh. Now, you ready? Yes. Would you like to have a few more real rockers on living the life?
Yes. Not just now. I'm still studying my Baha'i calendar.
All right, seriously, beloved friends, would you like to know just how vital and important to all of our teaching effort living the Baha'i life can be? I mean, statements from Baha'u'llah and the Master that will be hard for us to comprehend. They're so tremendous, and so great is the teaching force of living the life.
You've got me intrigued now.
All right, then. Let's take the beloved Master's words first. You know, he was distressed because the friends were not living the life of true Baha'is in America. They were quarreling and bickering, and so he wrote to one of the assemblies a powerful message way back in 1912 in a tablet to America.
Why this lack of harmony, the Master wrote. Verily, verily, I say unto you, were it not for this difference among you, the inhabitants of America in all these regions would have by now been attracted to the kingdom of God.
Imagine that.
And would have constituted themselves your helpers and your assisters. Is it meet that you should sacrifice this most glorious bounty for worthless imaginations?
Imagine that. Isn't that tremendous? If the spirit of unity and love in the inner life of the friends prevailed, all of the people of America would have been attracted to the kingdom of God by 1912, 54 years ago. Is this some small thing, then, this living the life? It's the greatest weapon in our armament as the army of Baha'u'llah. It releases a force that the entire world cannot resist, we're told. But that only spoke about America. How about the rest of the world? Listen, beloved friends, to these words of the blessed beauty Baha'u'llah. What we could have done if our inner life and our inner ears had listened to his sweet music and we had acted in accordance with his teachings.
We have admonished all the loved ones of God to take heed
lest the hem of our sacred vesture be smirched with the mire of unlawful deeds or be stained with the dust of reprehensible conduct. We have, moreover, exhorted them to fix their gaze upon whatsoever hath been revealed in our tablets.
Had their inner ears been attentive to the divine counsels which have shone forth from the dayspring of the pen of the All-Merciful, and hearkened unto his voice, most of the peoples of the earth would have by now been adorned with the ornament of his guidance.
Isn't that awe-inspiring? Not the Americans, but most of the people of the world.
Yes.
Baha'u'llah says in the Gleanings, pages 240, 241, if our inner ears had listened and been attentive, if we had hearkened to his voice, most of the people of the world would by now be following his guidance by living their life. Beloved friends, can we honestly feel that we've been victorious in the light of his overpowering statements? Really? In those same pages, Baha'u'llah says that he has reserved for himself the hearts of men, and that the keys to unlock all of the hearts, all of them are the believers, his loved ones, who have detached themselves from the world and are living the life. So we begin to see the power and the strength and the unquestioned importance and the utmost immediate urgency of living the Baha'i life if we want to touch the hearts of men. Nothing is as important to the faith and to mankind and to us. You know, in the convention of 1916, Mr. Roy Wilhelm, who was named a hand of the cause by our beloved guardian, he said that Mr. Wilhelm was a saint. Mr. Wilhelm told the convention, he said this, Abdu'l-Bahá said to me in New York in 1912 that if from the beginning we had lived up to the Baha'i principles in New York and had actually delivered the message actively to others, yes, if we had lived and proclaimed one, only one of the Baha'i principles, it would have made such a spiritual impression that by this time one half of New York City would have become Baha'i. Wow. 1912, 53 years ago, 54 years ago. Now, obviously, tonight is the time to begin, the moment right now. Because as soon as we improve, no matter how little, the faith improves and the world improves. Yeah. That's the important thing.
Yeah. I'd like very much to know exactly what kind of a life it is that Baha'u'llah and the Master and the beloved Guardian and our Supreme House of Justice are calling upon us to live.
Well, that's a good basic question.
And it needs a good basic answer.
Unfortunately, we have it. We have it. In the words of our beloved Guardian, I recommend to all of you a careful, prayerful study of the Advent of Divine Justice.
Yes.
It is a loving spiritual textbook on this subject. But let's extract the essence.
The Advent of Divine Justice, page 25. Such a chaste and holy life, with its implications of modesty, purity, temperance, decency, and clean-mindedness, involves no less than the exercise of moderation in all that pertains to dress, language, amusements, and all artistic and literary avocations. It demands daily vigilance and in the control of one's carnal desires and corrupt inclinations. It calls for the abandonment of a frivolous conduct with its excessive attachment to trivial and often misdirected pleasures.
It requires total abstinence from all alcoholic drinks, from opium, and similar habit-forming drugs. It condemns the prostitution of art and of literature, the practices of nudism and of companion marriage, infidelity in marital relationships, and all manner of promiscuity, of easy familiarity, and of sexual vices. It can tolerate no compromise with the theories and standards, the habits, and the excesses of a decadent age. Nay, rather, it seeks to demonstrate, through the dynamic force of its example, the pernicious character of such theories, the falsity of such standards, the hollowness of such claims, the perversity of such habits, and the sacrilegious character of such excesses.
That's
quite a challenge, isn't it?
Yes, it is quite a challenge. But we should face it with enthusiasm and excitement, now that we know what joys and happiness it brings. Not only to us, but to the world, to live the Baha'i life. Baha'u'llah has brought the supreme remedy, the only remedy for the ills of the world. If we do not learn to live the Baha'i life, we become part of the old world order around us, decayed, disillusioned, and hovering on the brink of destruction. Look at it.
I'd rather not.
That old lady.
In other words, it doesn't matter what people think, but only what Baha'u'llah thinks.
Well, I think a glance at the world around us should convince us of that. Mental hospitals filled to overflowing, so many cases they can't be handled. They send the people back untreated, alcoholism at an unprecedented peak, more tragic in its spread and greater in numbers than even mental illness. Thousands upon thousands of alcoholics roaming the streets, no help, no treatment, no room, no beds. The taking of habit-forming drugs has become almost epidemic in some areas and is on the increase. Juvenile delinquency, adult delinquency, murder, rape, arson, embezzlement, lying, cheating. The graph rises with frightening steepness. Crime is unprecedented, divorce rampant. In some states, nearly half the marriages end in divorce. Marriage ties lightly taken, easily broken. Lack of parental control, not the exception, but the rule. Suicide, not a monthly or daily thing, but an hour-by-hour disaster in the world. Is this the civilization to which we should look to tell us whether the standards of Baha'u'llah are right or wrong, or too strict or too lofty? And, beloved friends, thank God on bended knee that you're a believer in Baha'u'llah, the unifier of men, the organizer of the planet, the divine physician for this sick and dying society about us.
It's true that you hear people, both youth and adults, say when they hear the Baha'i standards of personal life that these are too strict a discipline and not suited to the present day.
You will thank God for that, huh?
Yeah, I would say so.
Because they're reversing the entire current of the present-day standards. They are eminently suitable, but they are not popular. They don't go along with the crowd. Why? Because the crowd's going over the precipice. Let's let the beloved guardian's own words answer that question. Tony?
It must be remembered, however, that the maintenance of such a high standard of moral conduct is not to be associated or confused with any form of asceticism or of excessive and bigoted puritanism. The standard inculcated by Baha'u'llah seeks under no circumstances to deny anyone the legitimate right and privilege to derive the fullest advantage and benefit from the manifold joys, beauties, and pleasures with which the world has been so plentifully enriched by an all-loving Creator.
Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah. I see the remedy quite clearly. In other words, if the illness is immorality, the remedy is rectitude of conduct.
Right. Mm-hmm.
If the disease is graft, corruption, and debasement, the remedy is integrity, incorruption, and nobility.
Precisely. Mm-hmm. And there is no other remedy. A partial remedy gives only a partial healing. And the disease remains, and it'll grow again.
It means that if we want a golden society, we must be a golden people and not of lead.
Indeed.
It requires golden conduct inside and not something that is a sham. We must be different.
So much so, in fact, our beloved guardian writes, that our rectitude of conduct must be demonstrated even in the impartiality of every defender of the faith against its enemies. Imagine. And in his fair-mindedness in recognizing any merits that enemy may possess, imagine, as well as in his honesty in discharging any obligation he may have toward that enemy. Imagine that.
Those are certainly qualities which are sadly missing in the present-day world.
And the effect of these Baha'i lives we lead are the spark that makes our entire machine work. Without Baha'is who live the life, all the rest of our efforts are meaningless. Baha'u'llah didn't come to the world to bring a worldwide teaching plan or to build temples and centers and summer schools and assemblies. Never. These are only the tools of his faith to make men better, to be greater channels of his love. Baha'u'llah came for one purpose only, to change the hearts of men, and through those changed hearts, to change the outer world around them. The Baha'is are the soul and the body of mankind. If the soul is not alive, vibrant and holy, then the body's dead. It's a useless corpse. Bury it. Forget it. We must never forget this, not for a moment. Hear what Shoghi Effendi says.
The friends must at all times bear in mind that they are, in a way, like soldiers under attack. The world is at present in an exceedingly dark spiritual condition. Hatred and prejudice of every sort are literally tearing it to pieces. We, on the other hand, are the custodians of the opposite forces of love, unity, of peace, and integration, and we must be continually on our guard, whether as individuals or as an assembly or community, lest through us these destructive negative forces enter into our midst.
In other words, our beloved God,